This is David Duke. This is David Duke, and this is the David Duke Web Radio Broadcast, broadcasting to the entire world with news and information of vital importance to Europeans and people of European descent, wherever they may dwell on the earth. Ladies and gentlemen, I've got a very interesting program for you. I know that James thought that I wasn't going to be able to make the air on time today. We were going to run an interview piece I did with Christopher Bolin, a very, very good piece. We will run that another time when I'm in the midst of traveling, but I have been traveling. And it's amazing that we live in an age where we can travel halfway around the world in just a space of a few hours. I am now 9 hours ahead on the time zone level where I live in the city of Mandeville near New Orleans. I'm in Eastern Europe. And again, I'm going back and doing some of the teaching that I feel is so important for me to do. Not only do I teach some international relations and do some lecturing on the Mideast question and other issues, political science, I'm meeting with many different political figures, thinkers, writers, historians, and preparing my next books, which I think are going to be very important for the movement. So far, the reaction and the response to My Awakening and Jewish supremacism has been absolutely overwhelming. And in fact, one of the things that I'm doing is that I'm going to be working very closely with Jürgen Graf, who I think to be one of the greatest intellectuals alive in the world today. And he has, in fact, translated Jewish supremacism into the German language. And I believe it's a very fine, literary, and beautiful translation. And we're going to be working on that and honing it down and getting it ready for publication. I've also decided, and of course I'm also working on a few other translations as well, and we expect to have a number of translations out in Europe by the beginning of next year. And there's many other prospects, by the way, of this book, this publication going out in many other nations of the world as well. Already it's being read in English around the world. And this radio program, I can tell you right now, it's being listened to by many individuals in many nations. To contact us on this show, don't forget that you can send an email directly to me at info1@davidduke.com, or you can go to stormfront.org, the town hall section, and you can post a comment right there, which will not only be read by myself, but also by the many, many viewers we have on the Stormfront Town Hall Forum line. Because let me tell you, the Town Hall Forum has already had about, I think, over 500,000 views so far, and I'm sure that it's going to continue to increase and grow as time goes on. There's a lot going on, and I want to talk about an issue that I think is one of the most vital and important issues in the United States of America, and that is the danger that we're facing from having Michael Chertoff as head of the Department of Homeland Security. Chertoff is the son of a rabbi. His mother was, in fact, and is an Israeli citizen, was an El Al, in fact, flight attendant. And by the way, practically all El Al attendants work with the Mossad. That's a long-standing practice with that airline. In fact, it's amazing how many agents there are. You take a little country like Israel, they have more agents per capita than any other nation in the world, probably 3 or 4 times per capita than the United States has, or that Russia has, or any other major society. It's just incredible. In fact, many people say that it's the most powerful and the strongest intelligence agency or spy agency in the world, next to maybe the CIA. I think it's probably eclipsed what the Russian intelligence networks. It's just incredible. But of course, their great asset is the fact that they've got a willing and a very dedicated tribal group all over the world that has insinuated itself in many high positions of power and influence and knowledge, and they have a tendency to pass that knowledge, pass that material, even if it's top secret of the countries they live in, on to their Israeli brethren. In fact, they don't really consider it brethren. They consider themselves really Jews first and people of the other nations of the world second. Now, I know that may sound radical and even hateful to some people, and I'm not saying that all Jews have this position, that all Jews put Israel over their own societies, their own countries, but there's no question that many, many do. And especially those Jews of power, they have a way of really bringing forward and promoting people in their own group to positions of influence who pass a litmus test of loyalty to Israel. One of the best examples I can show to prove that is the quotation that I use in my book, Jewish Supremacism. A great quotation, a very powerful quotation, and actually it's a horrible quotation in a sense, rather than being great, but it's by Stephen Steinlight, who was the former head of the National Affairs Department of the American Jewish Committee, the largest Jewish organization in the United States of America, so a very influential Jewish leader. And he made a statement in one of his articles, which was a print publication. God knows what he might say in a conversation privately. But in a print article, which he knew was going to be published and people could see, he basically said that as a typical, quote, typical Jew of his generation, he was raised as basically a Jewish supremacist. He didn't use that word, but he said a Jewish nationalist, which would be very similar to what people might call white nationalism. And he talked about how that every year he'd go to summer camp and salute a foreign flag and sing foreign anthems, and was taught that his ultimate loyalty really lied with Israel. Now, ladies and gentlemen, for me to say that, that's called anti-Semitism. But if a Jewish leader says that, I guess that's not anti-Semitism. Now, you can figure that one out. But that's the power, really, of my book, Jewish Supremacism, in the sense that I quote Jewish leaders themselves, and I show this incredible hypocrisy that exists all over the world in terms of these issues. Michael Chertoff is a very, very dangerous individual, and he just recently had a very interesting article and statement where he had a press conference, and boy, his true colors are coming out, let me tell you. And he had a press conference, and he discussed the fact that if America went into a terrorist situation where we had a terrorist attack, that he would, quote, take over the military operations about this to the United States. And I'll just quote to you. This is from Los Angeles Times, Nicole Goyette, August 9, 2005. Washington. Homeland Security Secretary Michael Chertoff said yesterday that if the military were deployed inside the United States in response to a terrorist attack, his department, not the Pentagon, would exercise overall control. The Department of Homeland Security has a responsibility under the President's directives to coordinate the entirety of the response to a terrorist act here in the United States, Chertoff said on CNN, responding to news reports that the Pentagon has drawn up plans for military action. And we can go on and on in this particular article, but it's just really amazing. I mean, he's basically telling us that he's going to be the commander-in-chief of the military in America if America comes under a terrorist attack. God, it makes you wonder, does he have anything planned? It's pretty amazing. Now, I'm going to share with you some information on Chertoff, and I've shared this information before, but it still is not getting the play that I think it must receive and it should receive in America. Few people know this, but Michael Chertoff, the head of Homeland Security, has had direct ties and a close relationship with an individual who is accused of financing the 9/11 attacks. Now, let me repeat that and make sure this that you understand exactly what I'm saying here. Michael Chertoff, the current head of our Homeland Security, a man, by the way, who's absolutely pro and utterly pro-Likud Zionist, radical Zionist. Father was a rabbi. Mother is an Israeli citizen by law. He's an Israeli citizen these days. This individual has close ties. In fact, he was the lawyer of a man who's been accused, and not by minor sources, the House International Relations Committee, for instance. He was the lawyer of a man accused of having had financial ties with Osama bin Laden for years. Let me give you the timeline. And I'm in debt to a Texas newspaper that published this, but it hasn't really been followed up very much, and it really needs to be. It has to be. And you can go to my site, do a search on Michael Chertoff, and the gentleman's name I'm talking about, he's not really a gentleman, but the individual I'm talking about who is suspected of financing 9/11 is Dr. Magdu Elamir. Now, here's the situation. From 1990 to 1994, Chertoff was the U.S. attorney for the District of New Jersey. All right? U.S. attorney, District of New Jersey. In 1993, February 26th, the World Trade Center was bombed. Now, this is not the 9/11 attack. This was, in fact, the first bombs, the bombs that went off, large bombs in the parking garages. It didn't bring the Trade Center down. But the FBI and the Justice Department traced this conspiracy to bomb the World Trade Center to a mosque in New Jersey, specifically in Newark, New Jersey. Now, Chertoff, as head or being U.S. attorney for the District of New Jersey, would have been absolutely privy as to all the people involved, both in financing the mosque, the leadership of this process, the people who are suspected in there. All right. So on February 26, 1993, the World Trade Center was bombed. All right. In 1998, foreign intelligence reports given to the then chairman of the House International Relations Committee, a Republican New York, Ben Gilman, accused Dr. Magdu Elamir of having had financial ties with Osama bin Laden for years, according to an August 2nd, 2002 Dateline NBC broadcast. Now, isn't that nice the way I bring these things up to you and and give you all the exact data so you can check this out if you want? There's many ways you can check this out and find out that I'm telling you the truth. Now, going back to Chertoff in the U.S. Attorney's Office. After Chertoff, all right, here's Chertoff in the middle of this investigation, 1993 bombing. All the investigative leads led to the mosque in Newark where the principal conspirators of the 1993 World Trade Center bombings were located, were centered. All right? He had to know all the suspects and the people involved, and certainly on the high suspicion list would have to be the individuals who financed that mosque and those activities. Well, ladies and gentlemen, as soon as Chertoff left the U.S. Attorney's Office, guess who became his client? That's right, his legal client. The same Dr. Magdu Elamir, who again has been cited by the House Internal Relations Committee Chairman Ben Gilman of having financial ties with Osama bin Laden for years. What happened was is that Elamir was being charged by the state of New Jersey with ripping off the state for millions of dollars. And by the way, in that investigation, they said that tens of millions of dollars went completely unaccounted. Completely unaccounted, ladies and gentlemen. And a lot of investigators suspect that that money actually went to Al-Qaeda, actually went to terrorist plot. Now, by the way, the plot does thicken here, and in fact it gets even more interesting as I go along here, and let me continue on with this timeline. Okay, in 1998, Foreign Intelligence, as I said, reports, given the chairman of the House International Relations Committee, says that Magdu Elamir supported the 9/11 attacks. All right. In 1999, Magdu Elamir and his brother, Muhammad, were named suspects in Operation Diamondback. Now, Operation Diamondback was an independent FBI ATF undercover infiltration of Pakistani arms merchants who sought to arm Osama bin Laden with conventional and nuclear weapons. All right, you got that. Now, this is according to researcher and former New Jersey police officer Alan Duncan, who's been involved in a lot of the 9/11 investigations. Now, it gets even more interesting, doesn't it? In June 20th, 2000, Chertoff defended the accused terrorist financier, Dr. Magdu Elmer, in a $16.7 million civil lawsuit by the state of New Jersey, according to a June 20th, 2000 article in The Record. I think that's the Bergen Record, which is the main newspaper up there. Okay, now let me get this straight. Now, let's just go ahead and go with this. All right, here's Chertoff, U.S. attorney. Here's the Trade Center bombing, 1993. Here's the mosque where the bombing's taking place. Here's the chief financier of the mosque, Dr. Magdu Elmer. All right? And then here is an Operation Diamondback where Elmer is suspected of being, were suspects in Operation Diamondback, an undercover infiltration of Pakistani arms merchants who sought to arm Osama bin Laden. All right? After that, Chertoff defends this individual, Magdu Elmer, in a $16.7 million civil lawsuit. Okay. Now, ladies and gentlemen, after that, in October of the next year, 2001, Chertoff was appointed head of Operation Green Quest, a multi-agency initiative to target sources of funding for terrorist organizations, and that's according to a U.S. Customs Service press release. And then in May of 2001, Elmer was confirmed Assistant Attorney General of the Criminal Division of the Justice Department. Getting interesting, isn't it? I saw I gave you the October one before the May one, but anyway, and by the way, it was in that capacity that he oversees all the criminal investigations in the United States and decide who will be prosecuted and who will not. I was doing a long-standing investigation, as you all know, for tax and other matters, and Mr. Chertoff is the guy that signed off on my prosecution, and that was shortly after I appeared in Al Jazeera, about 2 months after I appeared in Al Jazeera, where I exposed the Jewish role, the Zionist role, in covering up the 9/11 attacks, in celebrating those attacks, and certainly in their treachery and not warning the American people in advance of those attacks. That's a whole other story, which I'm not going to get into right now. But anyway, so here's Chertoff now. Then again, he was the attorney of this individual who was cited in an investigation, in an infiltration of terrorist armed suppliers who were supposedly supporting and supplying Osama bin Laden. All right, this same man now becomes Attorney General for the Criminal Justice Division, and he later became the head of the Terrorism Task Force. In June 2001, arrests in Operation Diamondback were completed. Now, guess what, ladies and gentlemen? When the government finally made their indictments in Operation Diamondback, under which, by the way, that Chertoff ended up having the purview because he was the top man in charge of the Justice Department in this area, there was no indictment of Magdu Elmer. His brother, yes, but Magdu, no. Even though Magdu Elmer was the real money bags and the real supporter and financier of everything. Now, doesn't that seem a little bit of a conflict of interest? Here's a man who was the attorney for an individual who's now under an investigation, but somehow that guy doesn't get indicted. And by the way, would Chertoff want it to be, if he did indict this individual who was his client, that would have certainly hit the news. It would have certainly become a public event. And it would certainly have, raised a lot of questions and eyebrows. He didn't want that either, not only from the standpoint of his client and whatever evil relationship that he had with him. And I suggest that he may have had an evil relationship with him in terms of 9/11. Who knows? But this whole case is absolutely incredible when you get down to it. So in June 2001, the arrests in Operation Diamondback were completed, right? But Magdu Elmer is not arrested. And listen to this. Now we're starting to get interesting facts. Before and after 9/11, the United States government rounded up the most elaborate probably spy organization the country's ever seen, maybe the biggest spy operation America's ever had. We had, against America, we had perhaps, in fact, the Fox News and their own investigative reporter revealed that about 140 Israelis were taken into custody. Not taken into custody, but arrested by the United States Department of Justice and the FBI, ATF, and the other investigative bodies, and under suspicion of espionage. And the evidence of this massive spy ring is absolutely hard, fast, and can be corroborated in every respect. And by the way, this spy ring, members of the spy ring, were also spying on, guess who? Muhammad Atta, the leader of the hijackers. And in fact, five of those Israeli agents were living on the same street as Muhammad Atta. And we even know their names thanks to some memos which were released by members of the United States government investigative forces who released these to the public because they saw no action being taken on this. Now, Shertoff, here we go again, as head of the Terrorism Task Force, was certainly in charge of the prosecution of these Israeli espionage agents in the United States of America. He had the final say on that. And guess what, ladies and gentlemen? These Israeli agents were all permitted to go home. And which is really amazing, too, because we know that many of them were actually spying on the... And they had a lot of knowledge about what happened in 9/11. In fact, as you probably know this already, and for those of you who are new to all this, I can just imagine those people listening to this for the first time, my program, and hearing this information for the first time. They must think I've just stepped out from the dark side of the moon here. But the truth is that there were five Israeli agents, Mossad agents, who were arrested by the FBI after they had gone onto a rooftop, filmed the 9/11 attacks, and they were caught filming and cheering and celebrating and whooping and hollering and enjoying the attacks with the greatest amount of vigor. It's just an amazing story, isn't it? They were also caught with massive amounts of cash. They were caught with tremendous... let me check this and see what this is. Hello? I'm on the program right now. So you can come by later. Just let me know, Bob. Okay, Bob. Bye-bye. Excuse the interruption. Again, this is a show in your living room, but this is a show in real life. It's one way I can do it. If I did it any other way, I couldn't do what I need to do it. In fact, that was Bob Twain, who's going to be a guest in this program probably over the next day or two. We'll have to wait and see. So he just called me, interrupted the program. I'm sorry for that. Anyway, so we'll go forward. And so here's this massive Israeli spy ring, and these people caught, in fact, filming it. They were caught with massive amounts of cash, with passports, with box cutters, by the way. And they were celebrating on the World Trade Center of September 11th, 2001. Now, that's pretty amazing, isn't it? And all these guys went scot-free back to Israel outside. In fact, by the way, as soon as they were released from prison, they all hightailed it back to Israel. And their evidence was overwhelming that they were definitely Mossad agents. Many of them had military history, and many of them had specific histories of demolitions, of secret ops, and that kind of thing. I think these gentlemen knew the attack was going to take place, and when they were on top of the rooftop filming it, they were there to record it for history, for their superiors back in Israel. And they were in a state of delirium and cheers and happiness because they saw transpire what they wanted to see. And what they saw, that they were laughing and cheering, was obviously something of great tragedy for the American people. Something that put tears in the eyes of almost any decent person around the world to know that all those innocent individuals in those towers who were fated to burn to death or falling to their deaths, or all the loved ones that would lose fathers or sons or daughters or wives. It's just incredible that these individuals would be sitting there cheering it. But you see, they wanted it to happen because they knew the 9/11 attacks would completely get Israel off the hook about what was going on in the Middle East. Israel was having a very bad year in 2001. Ariel Sharon was shortly in power, and people of the world saw Sharon for exactly what he was, which was a war criminal, a murderer, an individual that should be in prison himself for crimes against humanity. And he was the new Israeli president, which certainly is not a very good thing for Israel in the minds of the people of the world. Israel was equated with apartheid in the meetings in the United Nations in South Africa and elsewhere. And that was the year that the picture went out, of course, of the Palestinian little boy who was shot by the Israeli forces along with his father, where they were cringing in fear. That picture and film went out, you know, all over the world, and it caused a lot of difficulty for Israel. And there was a lot of pressure. The Palestinian Authority was beginning to be recognized by many countries all over the world. But 9/11 turned that around. In fact, by the way, Sharon was supposed to be facing war crimes trials in Belgium. At that point, the nation of Belgium was trying to go forward with the war crime trial against Sharon. And again, when 9/11 happened, everything changed, and the entire emphasis went away from what Israel was doing, and this war criminal is head of Israel, and what they were doing to the Palestinians, and of course went toward the other side of the coin. Now, I'm not arguing here that Israel did this event, that Israel was, you know, they certainly didn't, I don't think they piloted the planes or anything like that, but I can tell you this, I do think they knew about it ahead of time. They have prided themselves in infiltrating every major organization. I'm sure they've infiltrated Al-Qaeda. It's an international group. It'd be one of the easiest types of organizations to infiltrate. It's not a government organization per se, with the more unlimited resources that a government has. And they have been known, and they've taken pride in this. They could obviously have directed these attacks. That's possible. I don't know. I don't put anything like that beyond Israel. Look what they did with the Levant affair, where they attacked American installations in Egypt. You know, they tried to blame those attacks on the Egyptians and try to get America into a war with Egypt over that fact. And look what happened with the attack on the Liberty. I've been reading a lot of additional evidence on the Liberty attack, by the way, over the last couple of days. I was reading the American ambassador's report, who said that this is the individual who was American ambassador to Lebanon during the period, and he saw with CIA agents themselves and other intelligence operatives of the United States, he saw the transcripts of Israeli pilots talking about the fact that they said this was an American ship, and their authorities over the radio, these were intercepted radio transmissions, but the authorities of Israel said to go ahead and attack the ship. It was not a mistake, ladies and gentlemen. It was a brutal attack which killed 34 Americans and wounded 173 more. So I don't put anything like 9/11 past Israel. But at the very least, the evidence is overwhelming that Israel knew about it ahead of time. There were warning messages that went to Israeli citizens, members of the citizenships of Israel, who had citizenships to Israel in the trade towers. This is a fact. The Odigo records can prove that. You have a lot of other interesting data that takes place. There was certainly a high percentage of Israeli citizens that live and work in the trade center, and the death toll was impossibly low unless there was some degree of warning that went out. But anyway, here's Michael Chertoff, and there's the timeline. And now Michael Chertoff is telling the American people that, well, if there's a terrorist attack in the United States of America, he will take charge. He will take charge of the American military. This Jewish supremacist with loyalty to Israel over the United States of America. I urge you to read the story of... you just need to read the story. The story of Chertoff to Elamer to Homeland Security. The connection, which really shows in a lot of ways the level of Jewish supremacist control and domination in the American government and the American establishment. It is absolutely incredible, the level of their influence. And now we have this very active, radical Jewish supremacist who's telling us that when the next terrorist attack hits, he's taking over the American military. He's going to be, in effect, the commander-in-chief of the United States of America, because he's going to make the decisions about what we do in the event of that attack. it's really a terrible scenario, and it's a scary scenario, certainly for the people of the United States of America. And it's one that's really hard to believe in many, many ways. Okay, we're going to go to town hall, and I've also got a number of emails and so forth to read. And I've talked a long time about these issues today, but we're going to certainly talk a lot more. This is Joseph Morgan. He says, another good program to rebroadcast. And by the way, this is for the information for James or whoever else handles some of the posts when I'm doing some of these shows. It's very important that on our major broadcast that we put the links to whatever shows. If I'm in a situation where I'm traveling or I can't do a particular show a certain day, or there's a technical difficulty or problem, and we air an earlier show, we should go ahead and put that up so people can see it, and that's important. And Joseph Morgan suggests, he says, another good program to rebroadcast would be was one of David Duke's best, the Dr. Alexander Jacob interview. And that was a good one, and we will do that next time we have a free slot there. Friesundel Now says, boy, it's amazing what a few Zionists in key positions can do to a country. The insanity continues. And he quotes a story, August 10, 2005, minorities are the majority in Texas. And there are now more minorities in Texas than whites, and 1 in 6 U.S. Hispanics calls the state home, according to the latest census data. Again, the country is going. And, you know, Texas had a fairly low Hispanic population, believe it or not, 50, 60 years ago. It's just amazing. The transformation continues. And it's getting worse, ladies and gentlemen, not better. And it's amazing where we're going. This is from Albion. He says, Michael Chertoff, the 9/11 Connection, Representative Duke's Tuesday, January 25th, 2005 program or download, Duke's Al Jazeera appearance attacked, and Michael Chertoff, 9/11 Connection. So there you can find those links, by the way, on stormfront.org. Thank you, Albion, for sharing that information with people, because it's really an amazing thing. And we have James has gone ahead and posted one of the articles I wrote on that. From Finland, an excellent broadcast. Pity will be very hard for me to check all the points. If you don't mind, I will put this broadcast up on my web to spread it. Well, that's fine, from Finland, and I suggest to you this, that it's not so hard to check some of these sources with the internet. You can go in, do Google searches. You can go to the original publications and newspapers, and go forward. So. Pretty interesting. Here's Friesendahl Now. He says, the Chertoff Mossad 9/11 story doesn't receive enough attention any more than the Bush rape charges did. So, oh, that's interesting. He's showing me something about a woman who claimed that Bush raped her. I don't know what that's all about, and I'm not going to get into that because I haven't seen any evidence either way on that. So, but that's boy, we get a lot of stuff broadcast and shared, but nothing's out of bounds. I mean, people can talk and we can discuss all sorts of interests and allegations about those leaders in our government today. When I say governments, I don't just mean the United States of America. I mean any of the European or American governments around the world. Look at this guy Blair. I mean, my God, what a scumbag he is. He's just unbelievable. And who's the man behind him? It's Mr. Levy, Lord Levy, who has been the source and the financier of his political power for years and years and years. Okay, I've got that letter. I've got some more. Let me go back to the emails. See where we are here. All righty. Stop to Iraq War. All right. That's not the one I'm looking for. We got some emails here, and I'm just trying to get you the right one. I'm doing everything. I'm wearing all the hats at one time here. Working hard. Let's see here. All right, here's one just came in. He said, hello, Representative Duke. I just finished listening to your archive show on public turns against war. Duke Speaks Out, 626-205. I've heard what you believe in and what you stand for. How can I help? If ever you run for President of the United States of America or for another office in my town or state, I will rally for your election, and, of course, you have my vote. Thank you, Representative, for your words of wisdom and hope. and I, with thousands of others, thank you for stripping the Jewish supremacist wolves of their sheep's clothing. May God bless you and your family and all Europeans and European Americans. Sincerely, Big Busterman. Okay, well, great. Appreciate the note very, very much. We got a lot going on here. What else do we have? This is from Keir. He says, I was just wondering, what do you do in your spare time? What are your favorite foods, music, vacation spots? Do you watch any specific television programs? Actually, I don't watch any specific television programs. I've seen a few over time when I'm at somebody's house or somebody tunes it in, or you just kind of get ready for bed and you put the TV on. I've seen some of the Seinfeld shows, especially the ones people told me about where he mentioned me, where my name was mentioned. And I thought that was really a look into the Jewish psyche in a lot of ways. Of course, it was the more the humorous part of the Jewish psyche, maybe not some of the Jewish supremacist psyche, but it was a very, very interesting program in many ways. I'm so busy with the cause. I don't have much time for, I don't really take vacations. If I'm going somewhere in my work where there's a nice beach or there's a mountain I can climb or ski in the wintertime, I try to do that. And I try to take out a day or two here and there. I do like the water, the beach. I grew up in that. That's one reason why I've got some problems right now with some bad cells. I got some squamous cells because I got too many sunburns as a young man, and I'm pretty fair. I like this. I like the mountains. I think the greatest pastime that I have, the thing I most enjoy, is to climb mountains, and it's really great. You can get up early, and it's usually a one day operation, but it exhausts you for the week. It's like running a marathon if you've ever climbed a mountain. And when I'm in the Alps, I try to do that. If I'm there for extended periods of time, I try to do a mountain every week or two. Which is very great, not only for the physical body but also for the soul. I try to work out twice a week on average. Sometimes I don't get any workouts in because I'm traveling and busy, and the time just does not make itself available. And it takes me about 1 hour per workout, and that's plus the time to get there, come back, wherever I might be working out at. But about 1 hour. Twice a week. That's my average. That's what I try to do. And sometimes I can only work out maybe once a week, and sometimes none. But I do that religiously and specifically. What's my favorite foods? Well, I love great seafood, and I'm also a carnivore. I eat meat, and I prefer grass-fed beef simply because it's much healthier for you than the hormone-laden and the other artificial beef that we have. Grass-fed beef is high in omega-3s. I have a good friend who organically raises his beef and has grass-fed beef, and he's also my attorney, by the way. He's got a farm up in Mississippi, and we used to get our beef from there. Those are just some of the things. What kind of music I like? Well, I like a gamut of music from classical to country and some forms of rock. I like some forms of rock that are very much almost like classical in a sense, and there's a lot of it out there like that. And I'm not very much into bluesy music. I'm not a jazz aficionado. I certainly don't care much for rap, but I think you probably guessed that already. And I like a little bit of country as well, and that's pretty much my musical taste. A little bluegrass is great. I love a great acoustic guitar and a good voice. Those things that are really super. I really like the music of Traven Tucker, the man who performed at our conference. And by the way, he's on those DVDs, which are now ready. They're going to be into our office and be ready to ship any time. So if you want to order those DVDs, go for it. If you have problems ordering those on the web, and you can find that, of course, at davidduke.com. Let me know, because we'll definitely get our webmaster working to correct any problems you have. A couple of people, or at least one person, told me they were having trouble making the ordering work for the DVDs. And by the way, we've got a very big special on those right now, and we're offering all four of the DVDs. That's a regular $25 a piece, all four of them, for $65. That's 10 hours, over 10 hours of the highlights of the conference. Great speeches by Nick Griffin, by Jean-Michel Girard, by Don Black, by Kevin Strom, and many, many others. And you'll just love these DVDs. They're great. We also have them, of course, on VHS tapes. And we've got a super special right now, too, for those who haven't got the 2004s yet. You can get the four 2004s and the four DVDs from 2005, all eight for $100. It's really a very special introductory price. We're doing that because we need to get back some of our from our initial expenditure, because we've done these DVDs not in the home reproduction way, but with what they call a glass master. And it's a system so to make sure that it's compatible in all DVD players, where sometimes you can reproduce DVDs a little cheaper and in smaller quantities, but it's not always compatible, and sometimes 20% of the DVD players will not have it compatible. So we spent extra money. We also got these DVDs, which are double-layered. Anybody who's gone out and bought a double-layered disc knows how expensive they are, but that gives you twice the capacity of a normal DVD, and these are done in double-layer. So it's a tremendous buy, a tremendous offer, and I think this conference and the DVDs and tapes of this conference are going to give you a lot of inspiration and a lot of encouragement, very much so. And here's another individual, and this is from S. He says, yes, it's another huge disaster. Texas becomes a minority state. Absolutely. It is a disaster, and it continues, and the disaster continues to mount. All right, this is from Rich. He says, Mr. Duke, heard you say that black men should be in different sports than white men. Okay, so they were bred to be workers, but we are quickly coming up in their heels. We in America have been so brainwashed into thinking blacks are better at sports than whites, especially boxing, that even you seem to believe it. Well, apparently whites have not been paying enough attention to UFC fighting. I'm a mixed martial arts fighter, and I know whites are better at this type of fighting. It takes thinking and strategy, not just hitting like boxing, and blacks are dumbfounded by it. If you look at the past 15 years of UFC fighting, there have only been two or three black winners. Everyone else has been white. Forget boxing, even though it's part of the UFC, it's only a part. Our motto has always been, if your opponent is better at one style than you, use the style against him that you're better at. Mixed martial arts world is the most effective, powerful type of hand-to-hand combat that's ever been put together, and white men rule it. Take a look at the most destructive champions of the UFC right now, and they're 90% white men. We're truly top-ranked fighters in the world when it comes to true fighting. True, black men may have hard heads and be able to box well, but on the ground, white men are the thinkers and the winners. I think you should watch more UFC because it'll make you understand who the most lethal fighting race is. I've never lost to a black man in my life. This is a picture of me in Jamaica. No black man in that country beat me at mixed martial arts. Yes, sir. Well, that's interesting, and I tell you something. I'm not saying that blacks are simply better athletes, and I've always tried to preface any sort of statement like that by talking about what aspect of athletics. The truth is that whites and Asians dominate powerlifting per weight. Absolutely dominate it. Blacks are a small blip on the screen. So, believe it or not, whites tend, as a race, to be stronger than blacks. Blacks tend to be a bit faster. That doesn't mean all blacks are faster than all whites. It tends to be groups. But there are certainly differences between the races, and there's certain talents in certain sports which certainly lend itself to particular racial groups. Anyway, but I appreciate that, and I'm very interested to learn about this. I've always believed and always thought that the best form of hand-to-hand combat or self-defense, that kind of discipline, was kind of a mixed martial arts. I think straight karate or kung fu, and I've studied some of that myself. I have an honorary black belt degree. That's just honorary, but I have studied those disciplines. I've also boxed a bit in my life, and I've done a little judo as a younger man, and I've talked to some really experts at self-defense, and some of the basic things they teach you in special training, for instance, in the military, is very, very effective. They teach you basically how to block a punch, how to grab somebody's hand, put it behind their back, and basically take them off their feet. There's many other aspects, and it's kind of learning, you know, the basic reactions to how men fight, and if you do that more in a basic way, I think that you can actually have a better result in terms of the actual, you know, elements of fighting itself. Hopefully, we all won't have too much experience doing that. Unfortunately, because of who I am and the job that I've had some interesting situations in my life. I've had some times when the communists came in with lead pipes and baseball bats, you know, and I've had to defend myself more than once. And again, I'm glad that I've been a healthy individual, a strong individual, and a person who has some experience in that. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we're just about out of time for the day, and I'll certainly be back with you tomorrow. And I'm in Eastern Europe right now, and it's great that I'm here. And please don't be upset the fact that I'm not now in the United States. I spend a lot of time there. I just got back from 2 months in the U.S. of A., and I spend a lot of time. I travel and speak there, but I'm also working on issues around the world. And the truth is, when I'm back in Louisiana, I can't get the work done I need to on the intellectual issues. You'll see a lot more posts from me now that I'm here. You'll see more writing. You'll see more productivity. I'm also teaching a lot of important and up-and-coming young individuals. I'm also helping to advise many people running for office in this part of the world. There is a very, very serious movement going on in this part of the world for our cause, and I'm able to offer some American expertise about politics, and also I think I've had a big impact on how they frame their arguments and ideas. I think I've learned a lot over the years, and there has always been throughout the whole world a lot of kookiness on the Jewish issue, which kind of scares people away and makes people not quite understand what the real issue is. And I try to cut through all that and talk about, you know, the basic issues, that this is a tribe that's led by these supremacists and who basically have an agenda different than our own. It's really as simple as that. In fact, it's an agenda that is genocidal to our own. Our genocide, our demise, is their security. At least that's what they think. And I can quote from their own leaders, their own writers, their own philosophers about this kind of issue. And that's really what's happening in the West today. These people have enormous power. They're in media. They're in government. They're in the movies. I mean, you can just... They're in banking and finance. Right now, Mr. Wolfowitz is head of the World Bank. So how do you think that affects those nations and how they vote and how they deal with the problem of Israel when a Jewish supremacist may decide whether they get the loan or not? They know how to insinuate themselves in the top echelons of power and manipulate their power for their own benefit. You know, there's nothing wrong with people working for their own benefit, and I think all races and all people should, but I think there is something wrong in hypocrisy, and I think that people in public positions of trust shouldn't be having a conflict of interest. I think they should be deciding what's best for their respective country, who they represent, are best for the world if they're a member of the United Nations body, and not what's best for Israel, are best for the Jewish supremacist minority in the United States or in any other country. I think that makes very basic good sense. But however, you never hear this kind of argument because look who does control the media. Well, my friends, I will be back with you tomorrow, and then on Saturday, you know, Bob Whitaker will be with us in our Saturday time slot, and you know how he always does a really great job. Well, let me see. Let me find my closing music, and I'll depart. And I wish you well. I've been already meeting with a few people over here. I'm tired, though. It's 9 hours ahead. It's, you know, exactly 12 hours ahead would be exactly halfway around the world, so you can see how far I am away from home. But I can tell you I'm working hard, and it's great that this program can reach you no matter where you are, both the United States, Europe, and around the world. Okay. That's about it. See you later, and God bless you.
This has been David Duke for our heritage and our freedom.